This is a session with Chad, recorded on April 12th, copyright 2011, New Grandview Incorporated, all rights reserved. And we're starting 11:03 a.m. Hawaii time. Greetings, Ion.
Good afternoon.
Hey, Ion.
Hey.
Hey. I got pretty close last time about the triangulation. Can't quite do it yet, though, so I want to keep going.
Good.
Okay. Some of the things I didn't quite understand were how to lay out the waves. I'm just calibrating here. So,
you're fine.
Okay. When I'm laying out my sine and cosine wave, in terms of how high I put it, I know it doesn't matter, but is there just a good rule of thumb? Like, should the top of the peaks and troughs of the A sine and cosine come up to the level where the A angle is?
Well, not necessarily. See, you're transposing the wave between the two tangents, A, B, and B1, A1. So you would run them straight from A toward the second tangent. They don't have to have any corresponding response to the triangle. Because see, that's a different conversation. That's where you're mixing or validating a false premise of a span of time with a vibrational field, which is in the peaks and troughs of your sine cosine wavelength. So we could say you could go straight from the tangent AB, or at A, beginning at A, and just let it flow ever high it flows till you get to the second tangent.
Okay. So the beginning of my...
No, wait. There's a point here that we don't want you to get lost in. Well, okay. We're going to let you ask. But what we're saying is if in your mind you could plot A, B, and C, pull your second tangent, pull your sine cosine of the value of A on the point of A, and not even have a triangle there, would be perfectly acceptable. And then you could pull your wavelengths and then connect the A, C, B, C line segments so it doesn't confuse. Because, see, you're taking a vibration and putting it in a flat, plane geometry perspective. That's where it gets a little bit tricky.
Okay. But so if I start my A sine wave at the point of where my A angle point is, that's fine?
Yeah. That's perfect.
And
then go directly to the second tangent.
Okay. So I'm going from left to right to the second tangent.
Good.
And does it matter how high my wavelength is?
Yes, it does. It's as high as the wave pitch is. Because the height has to do with the pitch of the frequency that it repeats. So if it's very, very high, that means you're going to have many, many, many intersecting points. So however high that is, makes no difference. Because what you're trying to find is where the... Sorry. We're sorry.
Continue. Just finish that.
You're trying to find the intersecting points of where those two individual wavelengths intersect. And those you will want to plot in a flat, linear perspective.
Right. Okay, I guess what I don't get is how to set the height of the waves. Because I have one program that does the wavelengths for me, and I have another program that's my graph paper. So I just want to know, like, if I've done it on a certain scale in the wave program, when I put it and superimpose it over the graph program, I just want to make sure that I've got some kind of a rule of thumb to sort of squeeze the height of the waves.
Oh, but. Ask it a different way, because our response is you shouldn't have to squeeze the height of the wave, you see? It should have a value, a plottable value, is the point. But if you're asking from the squeezation I don't think that's a word that you're trying to apply won't apply, because the repetition of the wave itself, the frequency, the pitch, is what sets the high or lowness of the peak and trough wave anyway, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So that should be a given. So whatever value that is of it repeating, the wave repeating, would be that plottable value.
Okay, so when I'm computing my sine wave in my wave program, do I have to set the amplitude to be like 1.4 if that's the value of my A point?
Okay, at the most basic level, the answer to that question is yes. However, that will not apply every single time without failure exception. And you know how that goes when we have that issue. So that means for you to get the visual to picture exactly what you're working with, the answer is yes. But see, the amplitude, if you when you're able to convert it back to the chord, okay, from a conical perspective, what we're talking about is converting from the radius to degrees, because that will apply. When you convert back to degrees, it works both ways, but because it works both ways, the answer to your question will change later. But it's perfectly fine for you to get what you're getting so you can have a good visual for what you're achieving, and then you will redefine or more perfectly define that valuation future. But for this moment, works just great, but it won't work great forever.
Okay. Am I overcomplicating this?
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's okay. It's okay because that's fine. That's fine because nobody's hurt. Nobody's hurt. And actually, it's very delicious because you're actually getting the perspective. So any shift or change, however nominal or minimal, won't knock you off the horse. You see?
Okay.
We like that. You're fine. Ain't nobody, you're absolutely fine. It's fine. But yes, it is. Yes, it is.
You mean? Do you mean I'm getting every? You know, I'm getting a lot of different angles of it, and that's going to help me.
You'll have, well, just like everything with you, you won't have it unless you have an absolute, complete, and total understanding, overlaying of the whole process. Period.
Yeah.
See, so this is not odd. People don't think in code. Number one.
Yeah.
People don't think in code. Everything you see applies to code. Well, that's not the way it is with everyone. So, for you to, how do you say, overcompensate for your knowing, that's a blessing. It's also a curse, but it's a blessing.
Okay. All right. So, last time you said that I set the new x-axis based on the intersections of the negative sine and negative cosine running back from AB. I mean,
B1A1. Yes, okay.
So does that still apply?
Of course.
Okay. The thing that threw me off about that, though, was, again, where to start my negative sine and cosine from?
From the old plotted C value.
Okay. And the old plotted C value. And then again, it's a matter of how high do I set the waves on that one?
Set it as they are. You don't set the peak and trough. Those values are given in the frequency of the wavelength, are they not?
But when I talk about setting it, I'm talking about a zooming level, because I've got one program that...
Don't zoom it. Take it literal. Plot it. Make it go back to old calculus where the value is blah, and you plot it by counting over 2 and up 3 and went blah. Boom, 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 boom. Do it, do it, do it. And that's not trigonomics. That is geometry. See, this is where you're taking frequency, plotting frequency in a flat plane, linear plane, because time is nothing else but linear.
Okay.
And a false premise, but it's linear.
Yeah. Okay.
So,
so when I'm in my wave plotting program, and I'm doing like sine and then x over the radians, when I'm working on, let's say I'm working on my a sine, okay, and I'm putting in the radian value for that angle, do I precede the sine function with the value of my a, let's say euros to Canadian, to get that amplitude top of the peak to, okay, there we go. That's what I want to know.
That's right. That's right. And now be very visual with this process. Because when we say be very visual, you know what we mean. We're saying give notation to that value, which will serve you. And then if something shifts or requires a tweaking, you'll know exactly where that tweakage would appropriately be placed.
Okay.
You see? But now, someone else asking that question would be a very, 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 very different answer.
Okay.
But you get what you're saying. So you know if you do that and then you have to adjust the amplitude or pull a new chord that would affect pitch, you were able to do that. Others would not be able to do that.
Okay, when you say pull a new chord, what's a chord in this scenario?
It would be the AB tangent.
Okay. So
remember?
Yeah.
But you see, because that's the whole point of pitch, is it not?
The tangent is the whole point of pitch?
No. The chord. The chord. Vibration is circular. Geometry is flat.
Yeah. So the circular is represented by the waves in this,
yes,
right?
Yes, okay. Yes.
Okay. And just one more thing. With the negative sine and negative cosine coming back for those two waves, the multiplier for the amplitude on those, would that be the x value of that currency?
Yes. Because see, what the point is you originally started with the quandary of I have not an X and a Y value. And we say, yes, you do. Draw a great big square in the middle of your paper, and that's how you plot it. But what you're using the minus sine and cosine of C for is to establish a new X and a new Y axis. And the new Y axis, obviously, is your second tangent, B1A1, and you're using the minus sine cosine to set the new x-axis.
Based on their intersection points.
Yes.
On the peaks, right?
Well, or the troughs.
Okay.
See, because some may hit, some may not. It depends on any intersection points. And if all of them intersect inside, then you would take and you would connect each of those points. If every point of your minus sine cosine wavelength lands inside the triangle, then make an X on every intersection point and basically draw a line down the center.
Okay, but here's the thing. If I'm starting the sine wave, the negative sine wave, at the point where my C value is, that means it's going to go up above the x-axis and down below the x-axis.
Depends.
Right?
Depends.
Depends on what?
It doesn't have. Depends on the It depends on the value of the minus sine cosine wavelength.
No, the sine wave will always start at the x.
Oh, absolutely. But the how the frequency or the pitch of that frequency value. Could be a very, 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 very flat wave, or could be a very, 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 very rigid way up and way down.
What I'm saying is because the sign is starting on the x-axis and going up and then going down, all the troughs are going to be under the x-axis. They're never going to intersect in the triangle.
Not necessarily.
Give me an example of when that would happen.
When you have a minus value.
Oh.
You pull a minus value of a minus, you do a minus sine cosine on a minus value, that wouldn't be the case. They would all start below it.
Okay, so in the case of if my C was a minus value, that would be a case. Okay, I see.
Certainly.
Okay.
See, do you see how tricky that could be, though? Not knowing that, you could certainly spin yourself into a funk. But because that's the reason we're saying just be literal and convert the shift, then it'll work every time. Well, you may require a tiny bit of dressing, but once you get the whole conceptual view of what you're calculating, then your mind will easily allow you to adjust that as it's necessary. You see, you'll plot your formula that will work every single time.
All right.
And that's no problem. But we're being very specifically vague on purpose so that what we're working with will work for you every time to the point that you can calculate what that difference would be. You get in the middle of a specific value where you have what you call an anomaly, then you can adjust that from there. Just like we did if all the points were inclusive, you would then take the median x value between the peak and trough intersections of minus sine, minus cosine of the value of C.
Okay. All right. Okay, so once I have my new x-axis and my new y-axis is my B1A1, what's the next step to plot the A2 point?
Well, if you know what you used, okay, you have A, which is on the AB tangent line segment, and you know what that is.
Right.
You know the value, okay?
I know the value or I know the angle?
Well, you know both. You looked up the value of original A.
Yeah. But are you talking about, I know, which one is useful in A2? Is it the value or the angle?
Just simmer down. You know the value of A because you plotted it.
Yeah.
You found the value of A.
Yeah.
Okay. From the vibration, from that vibration, which is set, because that's how sine and cosines work, you now have a future tangent of B1A1. So the intersection from that value of A2 could absolutely be plotted with that information right there by basically pulling the angle. Because remember, A and A2 angle should be the same, should they not?
A and A2 angle should be the same. Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, well, if A2 has the same angle as A, and you know what A is, and you know the frequency vibration that's been emitted from the value of known A in a linear progression from a wavelength standpoint, then you have a new X and Y value, then you can plot very simply with a formula to tell you precisely what the value of A2 would be. To the 1,000th of a cent, if you're dealing with pennies.
Okay. So
that was very, very analytical. What we just said. Now, someone else asking, we may have a different conversation because some people have to see things. You see the formula, because all this conversation for you is only a boot getting to the formula. Because once you get to the formula, then you play with it and play with it and play with it and play with it to get every anomaly or rule regarding how to apply the formulary.
Yep.
You see?
Okay.
That's no problem. So what you're getting is theory that applies to rulings of how you apply. Like we said, sometimes your B value may plot above your A value.
Yep.
Remember? So it would be a, instead of an AB tangent, it would be a BA tangent. Well, if that occurs, then you have to invert your B1A1 tangent and make it A1B1 tangent.
Yeah.
You see? So now your A2 would be found where your previous B2 value would have been. And it works the same. See? So that way it works. But until you get the benchmark of what you're doing, that's accelerated.
Okay, but hold on. When you say, okay, the first tangent is AB, and then the second one's B1A1, do you mean that the B1A1 tangent is vertically reversed?
It would be. If the B value plots above the A value, instead of an ABC triangle, you now have a BAC triangle. And if that is the case, then you must also invert the B1A1 tangent.
Okay, but I mean in the case of the normal case where my A is above B.
Then it's B1A1. It's inverted from your AB line
okay,
segment.
So my little triangle, if my big triangle has A at the top, then B down, and then C down at the right, my B1A1 has my A2 at the top, B2 below, and then C at the bottom right. It's the same.
That's correct.
Okay. All right.
But if your A and B were inverted from your AB tangent beginning, then it would be now instead of AC, that would now be BC line segment. You see?
Yeah.
Because the second tangent would not intersect the AC line segment, it would intersect the BC line segment.
Okay.
So it still works, it's just completely inverted.
Okay, so in the second case where B is above A, I've got this.
Yes.
Top left on the big triangle is B, and then below it is A. Now, in the little triangle, the top one is B and the bottom one is A?
Well, it would be B2, and the little one would be A2.
Okay, but the positioning of B above A is the same as the positioning of B2 above A.
Yeah.
Okay. It seemed to me there was something about a flip going on at the tangent because the naming of the tangent was B1.
Right. And that doesn't matter when you're dealing in radians, but it makes every difference, as you well know, when you get into degrees. Remember? Because the radius of that circle is the radius. But the degree of how you pull a chord from a circle has everything to do with its outcome. So that's our point, is that it would invert.
Okay.
You see. And that's graduate level work.
Yeah.
But it's important because you could by very easily saying it with a little rule in your code, if B is plots greater than C, I'm sorry, if B plots greater than A, then A1B1 becomes B1A1 tangent. Because otherwise you're going to get the wrong answer if you don't put that notion into your plot.
Okay, so on my big triangle, when my A is above B, the tangent is called B1A1.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
And then reverse the reverse case.
Correct.
Okay, good.
And the reason that that's very important to get that labeling right, correct, precise, is because what you're plotting is on the new X and Y axis what the present future value of A2 is.
Okay. So when I move to my smaller triangle and my angle of A is the same as – sorry, my value of A2 angle is the same as my value of A angle – I've got that,
except it's now same vibration, but now it's at a different X and Y value.
Right.
See, so you would now pull, so now from your new place you could go backwards and prove what the present post value is. That's how you check your work.
So that would prove my A value.
Two value, that your answer for A2 is correct.
Wait a minute. My A2 would... No. I didn't understand that. You said...
I know.
My
we
A2
know, but it's recorded. You'll play with that a little bit. And it's all fun. It's all fun because we're going to let you ask, but go ahead.
Did you just say that my A... I could use my little triangle A2 to prove my A?
Yeah.
Okay.
And
no,
if you can do that, and if you can do that, you know your future A2 value is the correct one.
Yeah, so I can do back checking on it.
Well, okay. And that's what we were talking about before, which you also got by pulling a B4 tangent.
Right. So the
if you
thing,
can prove
the thing is,
B4, then you certainly know what it is to be.
Yeah. Okay. So my new x-axis, I have that. And I have my A2 angle. Now, out of those, how do I get what my new value of A2 is?
Oh, okay. Well, now you did that, but remember you took the points that intersect.
Yeah.
Either peak or trough.
Mm-hmm.
You count the number of times they intersect between the two tangents, and you get a value for that.
Yep.
If any of those plotted points are found with inside the triangle, you multiply them times themselves.
Yep.
Then you divide by the number of intersections total.
Yep.
Then you do the exact same thing for B.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now you have your... a value for A and a value for B.
Yep.
Now, if you're going to use the Maybank value, if you're going to do that, that's fine. You just go to Maybank because they are a day ahead.
Yeah. And for Maybank, can I use an FD? Because I couldn't find a CD value.
They have them.
Okay. Okay.
See,
so
the fund value could vary.
Okay. So CD at Maybank.
Yeah, and the reason that's important is because that's a day ahead.
Yeah, we established that. So I go there, I get my CD value, and then what do I do with that with my new A?
Okay, so you take your value. You take your value.
Of what, A, for example?
A.
Okay.
And you have your value of B.
Mm-hmm.
And so you would put A over B.
Yeah.
And divide it by or into the value, CD value, for the length of spans of time you're speaking about.
Right.
So if it's a one-day demand deposit, fine. If it's a 1 hour, fine. If it's a 1 month, fine, whatever that is. Then that should absolutely be able to plot your new value for A2. If you have a new X and Y value that you've now established.
Okay, so that formula was my new A value divided by my new B value. Those are from the intersection values.
Yep.
And then when I have that, I divide that by the value of, say, a 14-day CD at Maybank.
Correct. But now sometimes, depending on how you've had to invert your formula, because we want your formula to work every single time, it may be divided into the Maybank value. You see, you could get to where you would be in a completely transverse quadrant, where instead of dividing into it, it would divide into that amount.
Okay, but that depends on the quadrant, right?
That's right. Okay. But either could potentially apply.
Okay, but for the time being, I've been working with the very simple default case we have of keeping
my A above my
B.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and then once you get that back, wait now, once you get that value, then you plot that value on your new y-axis.
Okay, and that's my new A.
That's your new A, yes.
Okay.
Well, or what? That's going to be the future value of A2.
That's the future value of A2. And okay.
Finding relationship of what A is to B.
Now, that value that I just got by dividing my A intersections divided by my B intersections,
mm-hmm.
and then divided by the value of a 14-day CD. That value,
mm-hmm.
Where do I start counting that value? From my new X?
Your new X and Y value.
Okay, so it's on the new X axis. Okay.
Yep. And what you'll find is, and you'll finally, once you get this in your brain, meaning into the logic part of knowing, you'll almost be able to glance at the wave pitches and know if it's going to be very, very close or way, way far off. Like there's going to be a huge price jump or a huge price depreciation. You'll get good at it, and you'll be able to glance. And our example is in the event with Hal Holbrook looking at all of his line segments and circles and lines coming off all over the place, and he had his little dominoes, which were those new tangents. He could, at a glance, place the new tangent, the domino, and just by knowing how those, you know, once you do it a little bit, it's just like doing math in your head. Once you know what 2 times 2 is, you can almost say, okay, well, that's going to be 4. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, I'll put it there. So you'll know how to adjust this to know what its value is.
Okay.
But it's going to take a little bit, and we don't mind you playing with it because once you get it, it's got.
Okay. So what if
so that's how, that was an example of how he was standing over the stone going, well, it looks to me like me and Mr. Walker are going to meet very soon. And he put it down, and that set it. Now, that intersection of bumping into him is set, and he knew.
So that's what I'm doing is I'm setting the new domino.
Yeah, you're basing that on a nebulous new tangent, but you are then setting the spans or the scales of the false premise of time between those two tangents. So it makes no difference. Each of those bars could be a minute, and each of those bars could be a year.
So basically, I'm just programming my own mind for syncing up.
Well, we say there is no time. Time is a false premise. But we never said that you don't have the ability to make time tell.
Yeah.
We just say it's a nebulous, silly experience to learn how to tell time.
Okay. Yeah. So in the case of when my A has no intersections inside the triangle and my B has no intersections inside the triangle, does that mean I have nothing to work with for setting my new...
That's a very good indicator that the price is going to be flat.
Okay.
That's a very good indicator. So if an ear of corn is a dollar and nothing intersects in A and B, you pull your new C x-axis, you'll find that it'll plot at exactly where the A did. So that'll tell you that your future value of an ear of corn should also be a dollar. But that's not, you'll still do the math because you don't necessarily know that, because within a wavelength of how you're plotting your other points that you're triangulating, they could have an effect. So just because that's the case doesn't mean, okay, I know it's flat. No. You do the work. Do the program to make sure, because it might be a dollar and a thousandth of a penny.
Okay.
You see, but because that you know, one pip makes a difference when you're on the spot market, does it not?
Yeah.
Well, that's the point. But you got a real good indication that if they got the future's value of pork bellies down 30 points, and you've got it coming out as flat, you know right there that something's afoot, that they don't know something, so you're going the opposite way, of course.
Right.
But see, all that applies to theory based on your new knowing.
Right.
See.
Okay. And what's the significance of capturing these intersections within a triangle?
Because that's how triangulation works.
Okay, but normally in triangulation, you're finding one point in the middle. I'm catching all the intersections.
Yeah, you're finding one point in proportion to three other points. That's your tetrad.
No. If I have 3 intersection points inside the triangle and I have 10 intersection.
Oh, sorry. Then, okay, the divisible, you mean, is there a purpose for it being divisible by its multiplied sum value?
Yes.
Okay, that has to do with the very, okay, it's about the velocity of the pitch. For example, in the oil market, it's way, way up and way, way down and way, way up and way, way down. That means that you're going to have a very violent, tight sine cosine value. See, that's going to be way up and way down. Whereas something like the price of water is a relatively stable amount. Okay? So it would be a flatter frequency. So the point of that is that if it's a very, 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 very high and low peak intersection, or if the wavelength, the pitch, or the frequency of the wavelength itself is vast, meaning the highs are way high and the lows are way low, you'll have more intersecting points. And so it's divisible by the number of intersecting points, so it will balance the amount multiplied by, meaning potential connections inside the triangulated quadrant area.
I see. Okay.
So it basically is it's a temper. A
A temper.
temper. A temper. It balances it from a very, very weak frequency where you have just 3 points that intersect between A B and B1 A1, or you have one that has 100 intersecting points.
Okay.
And they certainly
Last
could.
week when we talked, you mentioned though that my AB tangent, to imagine it as a across a cone, like an ellipse,
Yes.
side of an ellipse. So you're
Yes.
bringing the three-dimensional dynamic in with that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
But you don't have to think about that because your computer from radius and degrees is automatically going to figure that for you. You just have
Okay.
to separate. That's why on your little computer thingy, you have to choose if it's in radians or degrees. Because that's what's going to pull a chord from that angle.
And you said it's
But,
fine that I'm working with radians for now?
well, you start with radians, but then you flip it to degrees. And then that's the way you check your math. Because if it's correct in radians and it's exactly the same in degrees, you know the precise degree that A2 would have the potential to shift, and will plot it linearly exactly what that shift would be.
Oh, so you say, okay, like do the process first with my radians and then go
Yeah,
back
and
and
then
try it
convert it.
again with degrees. And if they're
Correct.
equal, then I
You
verify.
know. Well,
Yeah.
look at your math. If it works both ways to Sunday, fuck yeah, it works.
Yeah.
You see?
Okay.
Because degree is, radians are great, but radians do not calculate every potential of degree. Whereas in a circular degree, every single angle is inclusive, meaning every single potential is included.
You mean because
Right.
with degrees I can go into like decimal points?
Yeah, yeah,
Yeah, okay.
yeah. Of course. And also gives you for a potential of an earthquake tearing the hell out of Japan, making it a dead zone, which who knew that that was going to affect you being able to pick up a Lexus at your local dealership? But with
Okay.
this, in degrees, you'll know exactly what degree it will have an effect.
Right. Okay. So you mentioned the B4 tangent would be if I had a B set up the B4, I could validate my A, my main triangle. And I'm interested in that going that way now to the
Okay.
B4.
Then you have your original Y, correct?
Yes.
And you have your future Y, correct, which is your B1, A1.
Yep.
Okay? So now, if that's the case, then you can go to the left of your original Y axis and pull another tangent parallel to the AB and the B1A1,
mm-hmm.
and work the exact same formula backwards. See, remember, because now you know how to work A2 back to A, so you certainly should be able to work it back to B4.
Because
the wavelength is consistent.
You say work A2 back to A.
Yep.
What did I do that?
When you check your work, if you multiply 2 times 2 and you equals and it equals 4, then you'd say, well, 4 divided by 2 equals 2, and you prove your work.
Okay, so once I've got my A2, you mean run my equations backwards, and
yeah.
I should get back to they should equal
to
the
A.
values of my original A. Okay.
And so if you're able to do that, then you could pull back an even future value back beyond your original Y, because that frequency can plot all the way back before time.
Okay, so that same backing out process that I did to get from my A2 to check my A,
yeah.
I would
yeah.
do that from A to my A4.
To B4.
Sorry, B4.
Because it will invert again. Going backward would invert again from your original AB.
Okay.
Anytime you make a move, it has to be opposite. You have to invert the tangent forward
or
back from
your original.
The tangent
inverts, but what's the nature of that change? How does that affect my values, though, other than the
Oh,
name?
Easy. Look, okay, remember, did we do the ice cream cone with you?
You started to mention ice cream cone. We didn't go too far.
Okay, if you take an ice cream cone, like the waffle cones,
yeah.
and you look at it sideways, that's a straight line, that's the tangent,
yeah.
and you're coming down to the pinpoint spot,
mm-hmm.
which would be your C,
yeah.
if you turn it on its side.
Yep.
And you start pulling a minus sine cosine wavelength from the pinpoint of that snow cone, or you know what I mean, the ice cream cone,
yeah.
your potential for intersection, you'll always hit the AB line segment because it's getting broader rather than to a pinpoint, precise, accurate point. So to make that top of that cone even broader, that's just going to give you more points to calculate to validate or prove your B4 aspect within your ratio.
Okay.
See, you won't miss because the angle of C2 and now C4 will
mm-hmm.
be the same.
Right.
The angle, remember
but when I go,
that angle?
But when I go to my bigger triangle to the left,
yes.
A is still going to be above B, right?
It would be, yes.
Yeah, okay. So when you said invert, you didn't mean invert A and B.
No, we mean invert what you call that tangent. You have to keep them straight because you got to know which. That's the reason you have the AB tangent and the B1A1 tangent.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that's significant is so you know where you were and where you're going to. So if you pulled a B4, that would be one between your original, so it would be equal to the B1A1 tangent. So it would be the B4A4 tangent. See,
yeah.
you would invert it because you crossed a tangent and made a new one, so it would have to invert. Just like in a helix, you know how it would spin? The same way it does with your tangents.
Okay.
But the values of A, B, and C are still A, B, and C. This is just how you label the new tangents that you pull. And the reason we say that is so you don't get lost in your calculations. Because if you can't identify instantly which tangent you're pulling from, you may find out and prove that the value is – you may just prove where you are rather than what it was or what it will be.
Okay.
Do you see? So it's just
yeah.
a way for you to know which angle you're pulling from to double-check, because one slip – And you're lost, you see. It won't work. You'll
mm-hmm.
you'll find that a dollar's worth 9 million yen, and it's not logical, you see. Rather than it moving 9.000009 up, it would convert it into saying that a dollar's worth 9 million yen, which seems not logical.
Okay. All right. So we've done with currency up to this point, and just for me to get another X-ray on it, what if we were doing like horses at the horse racetrack?
Very good. Then okay, here's how you do that. What you would do is you would pick the value of the horse.
You mean it's
they
shirt
do that
number?
As odds, don't they do
oh,
that
the
as odds.
Odds? Yeah.
Well, if those are valid and they're odds that are placed correctly, because remember way back in the day we talked about the frequency of potential. You call that probability?
Yeah. Yeah.
Remember, you went way deep into that.
Yeah.
And we told you many things about probability.
Mm-hmm.
That's what applies here. You could do the odds. You could do the value of the horses. You could do what they ran another race on the same track. The times that they ran.
Okay, so it's the same thing. Pick three horses and, like, you say they're all, each one of them, their odds.
Pick the value, any value, just use the same base for each one, you see.
Mm-hmm. And then for my A2 value, once I compute it, it would be telling me what the odds of my A2 horse are going to be on that day?
Depending, it won't tell you the odds, it'll tell you what the probability or the outcome of the probability would be.
Okay, so I'd use the present probability today on what the odds of the horse are today, right? That would be my starting point.
Yes.
Yeah. And then when I have my B1A1 tangent and I get my A2 value,
then you'll tell what the future outcome was. See, you're telling the future from the aspect of the past. You're telling the future from the aspect
no, if I
of
use,
the past.
But if I'm using the odds of this horse today, so when this horse is at the track and it's like, okay, this horse has 11-1 odds today.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And then if I compute and I end up with this horse has 10-1 odds in 1 week. That's telling me. No, that's not how I do it?
Well, you wouldn't want it from that aspect. What you'd want it is it'd be win, place, or show on the nose. Because if it was a 10-1 odds and all of a sudden your A value was 1-1, that means a 50-50 shot of it winning. That's the one to bet on. That's the favorite.
But how does my scale change from being an odds scale to being
it
a...
It doesn't. It's the ratio of 10-1 or 1-1.
Yeah, but today's ratio is what its odds are set at. And then the future one is
well,
what I...
No. But the way they calculate the odds are based on past experience.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, yeah.
See, and you want to know what the future experience is from a past referenced ratio. So if you knew that, and you see a horse who was 20-1, and all of a sudden is 1-1, you're like, that's the horse to bet.
Yeah.
You see?
Yeah.
And,
okay.
and then now, so you have your new X and Y value at 1-1, but your money's paid out based on 20-1 odds because they're paying from the old X and Y value of time.
Yeah, I gotcha. Okay. Okay, good.
Run that on pork bellies. By God, you'll see something.
Mm-hmm. All right. Is that a personal
or
question
what
about this?
A corn crop would apply.
Right. You know how you told me that I have one angle?
Do.
Does that have anything to do with this triangulation?
Yes.
Yeah? So,
yeah, it's how you linearly convert frequency within a triangulatable position. It eliminates every other possibility that is triangulatable. Okay? It eliminates every other possibility.
You mean my process? You mean my process?
The simple downfall of triangulation.
Are you saying my process is one has one angle?
Certainly. The only angle you're dealing with is A.
Yeah.
Because that's what you're trying to find out. But now what you haven't asked is, can I do the same thing for B? And we say, no. You'd have to recirculate your points of A, B, and C.
But you told me last week that if there's intersections in both the peaks and the troughs of...
Yep, there should be. There would be.
That those would be... The top would be my new x-axis and the bottom one would be my where my B is?
Well, from your minus sign... That would be from your minus sign cosine of C.
Right, yeah.
But your A and B won't set an axis. That's just plotting the vibration of how many times it repeats.
Right. So how would I set the how would I get the B2 value then?
Well, you would then recycle, you'd hit all clear, and
yep.
you chose A, B, and C, you'd move the values to what you want to know to A.
Okay. Yeah.
See, because it doesn't work. Because B is a completely different angle. See, and
yeah.
I guess you could use that to prove which horse is going to come in second, but we don't quite get the point of that.
Okay, so if what I want to know is currently my B, and I recycle and start over again,
yep.
Then what I want to know, which was B, is now A. That's a scenario where my B could be above my A, right?
It would be. Could be, yes.
Could
That's
be.
Correct.
Yeah.
Well, it depends on those values, but yes. But don't use this formula to figure out B ever. If you want to know what B is, start over and move that value of B to the A position. Because, see, you're just indiscriminately choosing 3 points.
Yeah.
So if that was the case and it was 3 horses that you had an idea that you're working with, you could work the formula 3 times and do – win, place, and show for every one of them, couldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Good.
Okay. Cool. All right.
See, so it's very broad. It's very broad. And it's easy. It's easy, Chad, when you're dealing with something that's a false premise anyway.
Yeah, because there's a lot that makes a lot of things arbitrary, right?
Everything is arbitrary.
Except the vibration.
Except the vibration, that is exactly correct. Because we would say apply this to your life. You are at a vibration. You bump into something that's also the same vibration, you can sleep with it.
Yeah.
And if that vibration changes, then you won't want to sleep with it. Boom. You just
right.
solved all relationship problems on the planet. For you.
Yeah.
You want a new car. You have your vibration is blah. The car's vibration is blah. If they're the same vibration, that's your car. It comes to you. Can't help.
Yeah, but how do you
it
get...
It finds you.
If it's not the same vibration, then what? You're just...
Then that's not the choice.
Then that's not the choice. Okay.
Then you can run that vibration from a future value of time and go, okay, in 9 months, 3 days, and 6 hours, I'll no longer have this car.
Right.
And the night before, somebody will come, blow up your car, run into your car, steal your car, blah, 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 blah.
But how do I get how do I measure the frequency of the car?
Oh, very easily. From the angle that you're predisposing from the frequency that you are. Triangulation identifies the things that are inside your triangulatable place.
No, let's just take a car, for example. Take a Maserati. What I see a black Maserati. What's the frequency of that?
Oh, okay. Well, that's your desire. Your desire will adjust you to that particular vibration. If you remember on several months ago on the cash flow payroll show, we said it'd be way cool if you could invent a little voltmeter that you had a black and a red probe and touch them to your pecs. And it said 6.1368. And then you go to the car lot and put it on every car, and if it's 6.1638, whatever those exact thing ones, then that's your car.
Yeah.
Because it emits a vibration. Any voltmeter would give the ohms of how much frequency is applied within a current level, does it not?
Yeah, well, couldn't I write a program then, an app, so that I could,
could.
It would have all the products in Amazon in the database, and
yes.
it would just, like, it would
yes.
sift through them and find the product.
Well, you wouldn't even
sift
through them. You wouldn't even sift through them. What you'd do is you'd have a desire. I want a new pea pod or a new telephone, a new piece of electronic, a new vacuum cleaner. Fuck, it doesn't make any difference. And it would comb through those things that were that, and that's the vacuum cleaner for the application that you're desiring the vacuum cleaner from in the first place, is the essence of creation. Because if you don't desire something, how do you create it anyway? Even if you create something that you find you don't desire, you still create it.
Mm-hmm.
Same way. But, good.
So you're saying the desire for the thing changes my frequency.
It sets a new angle. Which angle are you asking from? Is it inside my triangulatable position, yes or no? If it is, then you can have the car. If it's not, then choose another car.
Okay. So is that
I want to be a billionaire. Run your triangulation. If that's inside your triangle, inside your triangulatable position, then $1 billion is absolutely available to you. If it's not, then you've got to either change the vibration of $1 billion, which is very difficult, or change your angle of wavelength regarding the $1 billion, and you can line up to it.
How do I change my angle of vibration to the $1 billion?
Where you're plotting where you are from your original angle or percentage.
Where I'm plotting where I am. You mean just arbitrarily pick 3 points again?
Correct.
Okay.
That's correct. Because, see, that's the only play for time.
Okay, so
angle.
Those 3 points, let's say I want to be a billionaire, and I arbitrarily pick 3 points, I do this, and being a billionaire does not land in my triangulated position.
A2 equals $95. Then you know you're $95 closer to a billion.
Okay.
So in order to get to a different position, then you would have to have a new value. But then we would say do a before, and that'll help you set what your actual A value is. Okay? So if you gauge it from there, that's why we say that people nebulously talk about things like, well, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. That's only because of triangulation.
Okay, so if
your
I want
A
to
is at, if your A is at $50 and 3 weeks from tomorrow you want to be a billionaire, you're going to find that's not as easy to flow. It's outside your level or degree of vibration for triangulation. But if you've already got $1 billion and you run the same triangulation, chances are in 7 days you'll have $1 billion and a little bit more.
Okay.
Because the angle of where you are sets the balustrade, if that's what you're really creating, is a balustrade of the intersecting points of the vibration. It sets the balustrade of what fits within your triangulatable position.
Okay, so if I want to change what my now angle is,
you
then I would go to the I would go to the B4, right?
Yes. That's why people have fortunes and then they lose fortunes and then it's just a few minutes and they've got fortunes again.
Okay, so if I change my B4, if I change my B4 angle, then that changes my present angle.
Absolutely. And okay. So you're B1A1. What is it, the little glib thing? It takes one to be one.
Okay, but how do I...
That'll hit you about 3 o'clock in the morning. That was pretty... You'll get that from your B4 of what A is to be.
Okay.
We're saying them for the recording because you'll go back and play with that and go, holy fuck, that was pretty cool.
Okay, so changing my B4 angle of the past... what do? I just pick.
Well, you don't change your B4. You gauge your B4.
Oh, but I get. You mean choose my tangent where it's positioned?
Yeah. And then work your formula. Then you'll know where you were, and then where you are, and then where you are B. Because now you are definitively charting your vibration. And if you don't like the vibration that you have, then you have to find a new value for A. And that'll change the angle, which will shift the vibration, as you well know, because you have a fucking formula that calculates that for you.
Okay, and when you say go back, if I want to change my present angle, go back and change my B4 Tangent? You mean the arbitrary placement of that y-axis of the b4? You mean
yes,
I can play with
yes,
the arbitrariness of
yes,
that?
Yes, yes,
okay.
Yes, because it's a false premise.
Okay. But the angle, wouldn't the angle stay the same though?
Not from necessarily from the b4. See, it's getting broader. When you go before, remember the ice cream cone? If you make it taller, your triangulation possibility is larger, 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 and larger, because your original angle of C
mm-hmm.
will go on for infinity.
Mm-hmm.
It is. That angle is. But where you set tangents become triangulatable positions.
But setting tangents doesn't change the angle.
It changes the value that you're gauging from.
Okay. Yeah.
Of course. And when you can set sine and cosine from each place of that plotted value, pull a new x and y axis from it, you are changing the ground, the very ground in which you may be very well a billionaire. At the current x and y plotted position from the angle instituted from my tangent, I'm at $95.20. If I change my x, new x and y value, that $95 is now worth a billion, then
mm-hmm.
$1 billion is my A2 value.
Okay. So am I running sine and cosine off of my B4,
yep.
A, and B?
Yep.
Okay.
And you'll find that those wavelengths, in the big scheme, now this is good because you're finally getting to a real good place here now, Dad. When you start laying this thing out, if you took it on a flat piece of paper and drew what your now mind is allowing you, you're going to make your computer tell you, okay?
Yeah.
You can do multiples, and it becomes like a whole protraction for your world. It's the same way radio stations have a tower, and at a certain megahertz frequency, they can tell who can listen to the radio station and how far away.
Mm-hmm. So this
same
is like a broadcast
vibration.
Function. Yeah.
Based on an angle. And you have a radio station, and there's a mountain between you and the other side of it. You ain't going to get much frequency on the other side of that mountain, are you?
Right.
Same thing. But so see it from that perspective, you see, because you're taking something that's nebulous and vibrational. That's as close to woo-woo as we little old non-physical will get.
Yep.
That's as close to woo-woo as we get. But then when you start plotting it from simple geometry,
mm-hmm.
then it's a logical progression.
Okay. So when I'm working with my B4 tangent, my C and my negative sine and cosine, the negative sine and cosine is going to be pretty much, it won't change. Yeah, it'd be the same.
It won't
yeah.
change. But your x value can, depending on how large the cone gets.
What's that dynamic that makes the x change?
Well,
that's the intersection points on the sine and negative sine and cosine.
Fine. But if you pull a B4
mm-hmm.
to a C,
yeah.
when you plot that B4 value, you've also plotted A, when you run it back from the new value of X and Y and you count up, the B4 is going to be taller or a greater value than your A.
But that's not going to change the intersection points of the negative sine and cosine.
It doesn't, but it does calculate different how you would calculate the B4 on the new X axis. B4 is going to be gauged on your old XY value.
Okay.
You see? Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to pull the parallel line to make the new B4. Now, get that, the new B4 value.
The new before value. You mean where...
the new value of before.
Wait a minute. On my B4 tangent, I want to know what A4 is going to be, not what B4 is going to be, right?
That is exactly correct. But you remember, you converted, you flipped it. You flipped your line segment, the Y, the new, the third Y,
mm.
crossed AB, so it would have to go back to B over A.
Okay, so if my original big triangle on my present y-axis
yeah.
is A over B, then my B4 tangent would be B over A?
Correct. It would be
okay.
B4 over A4.
B4 over A4, okay.
Yeah, and then the and then your and if you went to the right of that, then your point would be B1 A1.
B1 A1. If I went to the right of
AC.
My original
if you went
AC.
To the went to the right of AC. I'm sorry, AB.
Yeah.
You went to the right of AB. That's
B1 A1.
That's correct. But if you go to the left of AB,
mm-hmm.
it's B4, A4.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Now, get this now. This even works within the words a 4.
Yeah.
B4.
But it does,
a
hold on, this
B.
is a little confusing now, because when I went to my A2 and B2, even though my original triangle was A over B, the B2 and A2, or sorry, hold on. Things are getting a little excited here.
Ooh, we love it when vibration starts picking up. You're drawing it. We like it. That's fun.
So anyway, just because I don't want to get confused, I want to make
you're
the
fine.
Shape stick.
You're
okay?
fine.
My original big triangle is A over B. Then I have my A2
that's
over B.
That's your tangent.
B2.
Your first tangent is A over B.
My second tangent, B1, A1, is
that's
also
correct.
A over B. It's A2 over B2. Right?
No, your second is B1 over A1.
See, that's
now,
earlier. That
No. We're not talking about angles. We're talking about labeling tangents.
I'm talking about the point, okay?
The points never change.
The points.
A is on the AC line segment, no matter if you draw a million tangents.
Okay, so in B4, in the B4 tangent, A is still above B if A is
yes.
above B.
Yes.
Originally.
It's
okay.
just the label the label to which tangent you're pulling from is now B4 over A4. But that's just like saying that we could say Y1, Y2, Y3. But if you didn't know how that interplay went, you'd get lost in the calculations of what you're proving.
Yeah, but that the label of that tangent doesn't matter until I get into degrees, you said.
Well, but that's broadness or narrowness within a vibrational frequency from a set point.
I'm
so,
just confirming. That's right. Correct?
You're right. You're exactly right. The angles never change, but it's very important to know how to label the tangents so you know what you're ciphering from or to.
Right. Yep.
Good. Now, you've got enough now to play that out to get a taste.
Yeah.
You could actually start running some numbers. And then once you get that definitive, then you can plug it into your computer. But we say do the individual aspects, making it work. And when you go, holy fuck, I got it, then put it into your long program where you got A, B, C, plug it in. The answer is, boom, A2 equals, boom. Before you trust that, you do each part of it yourself. The same way you do code, you know how you do it. You play it out, make sure every aspect of it applies the way you want it to, and you can see those values, then let the computer do it. The chip body will do it. The chip body's already doing this for you already, really. You just
yeah.
want to know.
Yep.
And that's why we said in the beginning of days, which is going to be the downfall of non-physical, if you can't remember, triangulate.
Okay, good.
Okay, what else you got?
I'm gloating. So this thing Bob and I are working on, I just want to get an enhanced geometric grasp of this. So the 3D representation of the spinning angel diagram,
yes.
would that be the rhombic dodecahedron as a
it
solid?
Would.
Okay.
It would.
Okay.
It would. That's how, that's the basis of the essence of a holographic image anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, the tessellation of the
yeah,
rhombic dodecahedron
good.
Unit.
Good. And, okay. and any good dodecahedron, you could always pull a pentad in any time, could you not?
In a good dodecahedron,
yes,
you
could, point, if you look at the value points of a dodecahedron, you can pull a pentad in any layer.
Yeah.
It's
That's
an MRI image of a holographic image.
Correct. It's the unit cell of a hologram.
It's the cross section that stacks that allows it to be have three-dimension aspect.
Okay. Is it also helpful to imagine the lines to go on infinitely?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
and watch,
yes.
And they create, as they go out infinitely, new tessellations emerge.
Good,
right?
good. And now that here's where your chords will come in. When
okay.
you start getting into tessellation, then the frequency parameters can be affected. So always pull a chord if you're going to get into tessellation.
Always pull a
prove
chord.
It.
So
pull,
the chord.
Pull pull a chord to prove tessellation. Because you could get off a hair and be way off at the end. You know what I'm saying?
The chords in the angel diagram in with the 49 boxes, that ring,
that
is an example of the what you're talking about to prove tessellation? Okay.
Yeah. And the math's already done for you. So, I mean, you don't even have to know that stuff to do it because the pinpoints in the triangles are already worked out.
Right. And the frequencies are already in the diagram to give
the absolute X and Y values are plotted right there in the circle.
In like inside Saim, you mean like the 21 over 8?
Yeah. Okay. So once that's set, but we get it. For you to have that concept of knowing, that then you not only know it, you can demonstrate it.
Yeah.
Do you see? And when that's the case, then it's real. That's the difference in woo-woo and I'm sleeping with it.
Mm-hmm.
You see? That's the difference. One is a wet dream and the other one is sticky.
Okay.
Good.
So the 21 over 8 in Siam, for example, you mean 21 divided by 8 would be the frequency?
Well, play with it and see what you come up with.
Okay.
And then put those points in movement, and it'll get fun.
Put which points in the movement? You mean
the ones in the triangles.
Oh, okay, yeah, it's the same thing from before.
Yeah, and then you can pull chords to prove it.
Okay.
By extending those line segments to where it hits the circle, and there's your chord.
Yep, good.
And that makes it work in radians and degrees.
The chord makes it work in radians and degrees.
Yes, because it gives absolute pinpointable degrees of angles within a circle. At wherever it hits the circle, it'll tell you exactly where it is.
Mm-hmm.
And see, it includes every possibility inside a 360-degree circle.
Right, and normally in a normal heptagram, there are 900 degrees in the angles, right? But,
correct.
But in the case of the angel diagram, is that the case, or is it different?
More, because remember, it's not a circle.
Yeah, it's ellipse. Okay.
So, if you take two points, and you draw a string to it in a sandbox.
Yeah.
Okay? And you take the stick, and bring it behind the rope, and you follow the rope all the way around, so you get to the other stick and then stop and then flip the cord on the other side, put the stick behind the rope and drag it around like they do the orbit, planetary orbit business.
Yeah.
That's how you get the difference between those two fixed points of axis that are not, they are each circular, but in perspective of each other, it makes that ellipse shape perfectly.
Okay. Yeah, I'll have to work with that.
Play with that a little, but that's not a deal breaker, but that'll serve you soon.
Okay. Cool.
What great fun. Very good. Anything else? What are we remembering to forget to remember to triangulate?
Well, we're pretty well ended, Chad. Let me see. It's an hour and 10 to 15 minutes.
Yeah, I've hit all my questions, so I'm kind of there.
Good, let me just
now
let
play
me just,
with it, re-listen to it, and apply it.
Yes.
This is where we normally would say, now be easy. No, screw that noise. Take it literal.
All right.
Because you're getting to pinpoints finally.
Cool. Thank
you. Very, very wonderful. Therefore, we are totally, deliciously, happily, forever, Albert Schweitzer.